Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Connie Hamilton. She has served as in the field of education as a teacher, instructional coach, elementary and secondary principal, and district curriculum director. She is the author of two books, including her latest, the bestseller, Hacking Questions. Connie is known for hands-on practical approaches to solving instructional snafus. Educators love how she offers specific strategies that actually work and can be used immediately. Often referred to as the questioning guru, Connie has a unique ability to coach administrators and teachers to guide them through reflection and professional discovery for an amazing PD experience. Welcome to the podcast, Connie.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, and I've seen a lot of your sessions at AMLE, for example, and through ASCD in the past year. So, you know, I've learned a lot from your strategies, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about on the podcast today, are things that people can just take and use immediately. But we'll start off with my first question I ask all my guests about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Well, trust me, I've been in the trenches plenty. So as I was thinking about anticipating this question, I thought looking more recently and maybe an experience that people can relate to, I think all of us, the world was kind of thrown into the trenches as COVID hit. And for me, COVID came right at a time when I had just made the really hard decision to leave education and build consulting and kind of follow my dream full time. And literally, I left the school of my effective date of February 1. Wow. Of 2020. And so when all of this came tumbling down and I was faced with, I can't be in schools. And if I can't be in schools, then how can I deliver PD? And really looking at how am I going to, in a good frame of mind, share, hey, I can teach you how to ask better questions. When really teachers were like, how am I going to be safe? Is my family safe? How am I going to get groceries? For Pete's sake, we're running out of toilet paper. Like at that time, to be concerned about my own income and livelihood and where I was going was really needed to be sort of secondary. And so I gave myself permission to kind of wallow for a few weeks of, holy cow, what have I done? Why did I leave education? I never should have left this job that I loved. And, I kind of went back to my roots of why did I get into this in the first place? Because my first instinct was I can't, what I do is face to face. Like I can't do this over Zoom. And so I began to think about what was really important to me and how do we make sure that teachers maintain things like inclusion and engagement and scaffolding and care and concern and all of those things don't go away just because we are communicating through a camera. And so I dug myself out of the pit of pity that I was living in and decided that I was going to reformat, but really still stay true to all of the beliefs that I'd had before, but just really think about it in a different way, which is exactly what every teacher on the planet had to do is I'm accustomed to delivering instruction face to face. Now, how do I do that in a virtual setting? So I began to think about how do you include engagement virtually? How do you make sure that that students have access to quality questions when you're in a Zoom? How do students persevere through productive struggle as a collaborative group online when they can't be side by side? And I was able to create some valuable opportunities where I could help teachers to look for ways that they could maintain what they love they love to do, and still be able to dig myself out of a way of keeping myself busy from day to day now that I was no longer attached to a school. So that's my story.
Yeah. And that just, you know, kind of fell right then, like you'd had no premonition that obviously things were going to happen. And, you know, you decided to branch out full-time consulting at that date, but we're so glad that you were available then to kind of jump in and join webinars and just give the PD and you're involved with Corin a lot as well. And I remember how Corin had the book clubs already with Doug Fisher and Nancy Frey already, I think at the end of March. And I just jumped on to those book clubs and, you know, just really, absorbed the information that was coming. Like everything was free and everything was like at my fingertips that people were making available. So that really helped. So in this podcast today, we wanted to talk a little bit about instructional strategies as teachers wrap up the school year and in terms of scaffolding and also lesson closure. So tell me a little bit about how you support teachers. One of the big topics we discussed in the pre-chat were lesson closure, because a lot of teachers just kind of, you know, in the lesson without that closure or without the exit ticket or the formative assessment. So tell me about your thoughts there.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I did pre-COVID and coming up very soon, so we're recording this podcast way before it's actually going to be shared, but in February was my first day back to be actually inside a school when students were present. So it was almost an entire year before I was able to step inside a school. And what I spend most of my time doing is working with small groups of teachers to provide collaborative groups where teachers are observing one another and giving feedback and reflecting on their practices. And after doing that for a long time, one of the patterns that I was able to see is that when lessons run long, we almost always don't offer any closure. Like literally the end of the lesson ends with, whoops, we ran out of time. We'll pick up where we left off tomorrow. Bye. Have a good day. Don't forget to XYZ.
Yeah.
And that's the closure. And in the reflection process of coaching with teachers to think about what are we gaining and as a result of running out of time, what does that mean for tomorrow's lesson? And I began to think about how we deal with that in our own lives. Mm-hmm. So thinking of a teacher at the end of a busy day, we almost always, you know, the buses are gone and the kids have left and we sit and finally have a chance to get off of our feet for a moment and think about, okay, what did I accomplish today? Mm-hmm. What were the surprises? How am I going to address those surprises? What didn't I get done that I need to do tomorrow? How do I need to punt? Like, what do I need to take and learn from today so that I can be better prepared for tomorrow? And sometimes that's as little as 5 minutes and sometimes it's hours of reflection. But regardless, when we take that time to pause and process today, we are so much better prepared for tomorrow. And the reason for that is that reflection and analyzation is a complex thinking skill. And when we take the time to analyze or critique the effectiveness of our day when it's fresh, it's easier to do because it's fresh in our minds. If we wait until the next day, we hurry up and leave. Well, let me even backtrack. So once we are able to process that, then tomorrow, the actual thinking skill, if you think of Bloom's taxonomy, the actual thinking skill that we're using is retrieval, because we've already done the tough thinking of what went well yesterday and what do I need to do tomorrow. And so now all I have to do is remember what I decided that I needed to do and then execute it. Failure to do that leaves us with not only trying to recall what actually happened yesterday, but then also analyzing the impact of what happened yesterday, developing and creating a plan for today, and then executing it. That's a lot of brain power in the morning that you're not anticipating.
Mm-hmm.
Do the exact same thing to kids. When we don't permit them the opportunity to bring some closure to the time that's dedicated for a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So we mistakenly try to lump those two things together of lesson closure, meaning the learning we expect to be completed and we're ready for a formative assessment to check for understanding versus we're out of time. In a perfect world, those two things happen at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have a single task that kills two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm.
But when it doesn't excuse us from the responsibility of bringing closure to the lesson time and giving students the opportunity to reflect on what did I accomplish as a learner today? What didn't I accomplish as a learner today? And what are my responsibilities as a learner tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
All of that responsibility falls on the teacher if we don't bring closure to the time, even if we know that the learning needs to carry over for additional time the following day. So it's important to separate those two things. So,
and I'm thinking back to my own teaching when I was teaching French in high school, for example, and, you know, I was very organized. I would have my lesson plan, you know, set out day by day. And, you know, I had several sections with the same content and some classes got to a certain amount, some classes didn't. And my reflection piece was just kind of putting a note on that lesson plan, right? That we need to do such and such tomorrow. But, you know, I was guilty of not having that closure sometimes. You know, sometimes I would have an exit ticket or some type of, you know, ticket out the door scheduled and we just didn't get to that. So I think that, you know, that's a common issue that, you know, teachers, you know, and then you have multiple sections, right? And you're asking your first period, did we get to this? Because if you don't reflect, right? If you don't have that jotted down note, like, then you're kind of confused that you know, as a teacher, they understand like, okay, well, this we know, no, miss, we didn't get to, you haven't taught us that yet. Oh, I taught my fifth period that, right? Then you kind of seem disorganized, right? When you don't take that time to reflect and actually kind of summarize for yourself in some note format or something what you actually covered and what needs to be done the next day.
Yeah, I think what you bring up is a really valid point that not only do teachers, and we know that we need to provide some kind of reflection for ourselves so that we're prepared for our lesson tomorrow. And in the same time, I think that it's more commonly missed that students need that closure as well, that students need the opportunity to reflect on what happened today. What did I learn? What do I still need to learn? What gaps do I have? And how am I going to contribute as a partner to my own learning to fill those gaps?
Mm-hmm.
So we often think of, we have maybe a closing activity or a finalist formative assessment, low stakes assessment, something like that we have at the end when we say, okay, after it's all done, this is, let's check and make sure you learned what you were supposed to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we didn't get to that point, if the only thing that we have prepared is some sort of a formative assessment, and we know darn well that kids aren't going to do well on that formative assessment, it's sort of a free ticket to say, oh, well, I can't give the exit ticket because I know that students aren't going to be successful. And so to that, I push back and say, number one is they might have learned more than you think that they did. They might be able to fill in some blanks even without that additional activity. But let's say that is true, that we aren't interested in getting a formative assessment at this exact point of the stage of learning, then those are the times then you can ask students reflective questions that are more metacognitive. Things like, what was a challenge for you today?
Okay.
What was a success for you today? How much effort did you have to put in to your learning today? What is, here's a great one too, is when you do learn X, fill in the blank, whatever your learning target is, when you do learn that, how's that going to help you in life? Where is this going to be useful? So for example, I don't speak a world language. I don't speak Chinese, but I could answer and reflect on the question of how might it help me if I could speak Chinese? And so those are questions that learners should be able to reflect and respond on the importance and the relevance of what it is that they're learning, even if they haven't reached a mastery point yet. Mm-hmm. So I continue to argue that closure is a really critical, and I would even go so far as to say a non-negotiable component mm-hmm. of every single lesson. Mm-hmm. And when given that time and the opportunity to reflect, like, okay, your lesson went too long, let's talk about it. What part of the lesson, if you could go back and do over and fit mm-hmm. everything into your 55-minute block, what would you give up in order to make sure that you had enough closure? And more often than not, teachers say that their introduction went too long, which mm-hmm. I find a little comical, because we start off in a deficit mm-hmm. from a timing perspective, and then we're playing catch up the entire time. And so just with a few little time checks within your lesson to mm-hmm. just think about, to say, okay, I have this closure, and I know that this closure is going to take me 3 to 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so I need to make sure that no matter where we are in the learning process, I'm going to reserve 3 or 4 minutes to bring this time period and put a button on the time mm-hmm. and allow students to have that. What did I learn today? What's the relevance? What kind of progress did I make toward mastery, even if I didn't get there yet? Mm-hmm. And to have that little bit of celebration, because, you know, if I have to carry this over to tomorrow's lesson, what's 3 more minutes for today? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Maintaining on that task. That time is better repurposed mm-hmm. in a reflection or in some kind of a closure that allows students to be mindful of the fact that the learning today was still important, even if we didn't reach our goal yet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's really the purpose of a time closure. This is the end of our learning time. So let's think about what we have done. And yeah. We can't partner with kids if we bear all of that responsibility of the reflection on our own. Like what you were saying, you know, you were tasked with, okay, first hour, what did we accomplish? And mm-hmm. you know, you left notes for yourself. My argument is, let's bring students into that conversation mm-hmm. as well, so that it isn't, you're not saying, did we learn this? But you're mm-hmm. asking, you can launch your lesson with the introduction to say, okay, let's revisit our plan from yesterday. What is our plan that we mm-hmm. developed in our closure yesterday? Mm-hmm. And now students are also in that low level of blooms mm-hmm. of recall, so that they can be in a better position to move into those higher levels of thinking.
Yeah. And I think having these, kind of metacognition strategies and those either through exit slips or through a discussion as a closure, that also is data. It's kind of like the data driven dialogue piece, where we're using data from our discussions or from the Google form, or, you know, some type of written closure activity they do. And that gives us obviously a lot more to base our next lesson on.
Sure.
Obviously, because then if we don't have that, then we're not getting feedback, right? I mean, that's free feedback from students, right? I kind of learned along the way, it's a lot better to get that daily feedback than just, oh, at the end of the semester.
Sure, right? Yeah.
Because sometimes I do a teacher evaluation at the end of the semester, but having something where, yeah, they're thinking about their learning, they're thinking about what could have been done differently, or, you know, the X questions that you had, how what was a success, right? Or how could, you know.
Think about growth mindset. I mean, it's a perfect place. If you're mm-hmm. not in a place where you feel like content assessment mm-hmm. is appropriate at that particular time, mm-hmm. it's just not where you want to place your formative, mm-hmm. then this is a really great time for SEL, for looking at their communication, mm-hmm. their collaboration skills, and anything that fosters growth mindset. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what's something that challenged you today? Was it difficult? Was it easy? Was it mm-hmm. too easy? What do we need to do to make it challenging? How is it going to be relevant to your future learning? What did you learn from someone else? What was an aha today? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Where even just looking at, if this is a continuum to mastery, where would you place yourself on that continuum? Mm-hmm. And then what are two things that you can do to reach the end? Mm-hmm. So just so that they're thinking about the progress that they made, and then also part of developing a plan mm-hmm. to help themselves to fill in those gaps.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this ties a little bit into the scope and sequence. And as this airs at the end of the school year, there are teachers who, obviously, this has been an extraordinary difficult year. And, you know, teachers set out every year, whether it was the 2021 school year or any other year, and when I was teaching French, it was like, okay, I have 6 chapters to cover. And my colleague next door, we had our plan, you know, we're going to get to X, Y, and Z before Christmas. And our final for first semester is going to be X, Y, and Z. And so there's that scope and sequence that we think about with our curriculum. If, you know, there are certain things that are, if you teach a subject that might be on one of the standardized tests, right, they should learn X before that date. Mm-hmm. So, how would you guide teachers that are maybe scrambling as they end the school year, right? Thinking, hey, I got to fit X, Y, and Z in, and trying to figure out what's the important thing to include and what can be left out.
Chill. I mean, it's even more prevalent this year. Yeah. Everyone is in the same boat. We know that there were time constraints that impacted learning this year that are going to just really put a monkey wrench in your scope and sequence. And when I think about the teachers that I formerly worked with and in my school district, and they're probably listening to your podcast right now and thinking, I cannot believe that Connie Hamilton is saying, let go of the scope and sequence.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, there is a guide and there is a point that you need to be able to depend on a vertical alignment to make sure that students get a good education for the 13 years that they are there. However, I also think that there is power in collaboration mm-hmm. among professionals. And I think the best thing that we can do now is to get a really solid handle on where the gaps are mm-hmm. and make sure that we communicate that to the teachers in the future. So my advice always is, if you're not going to get to everything, do not try the spray and pray approach. Really try to home in and intentionally create gaps. Mm-hmm. So instead of just sprinkling everything out there and seeing what some kids are going to pick up on this, and some kids are going to get this, and some kids are going to get this, and some kids are going to get this. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. now next year's teacher is left with a whole big hot mess of some kids understand different things by design. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If we can have any control over how we can tackle student gaps, mm-hmm. it is to be able to manage them and then communicate to say, this is something that we intentionally did not go intensely in this particular piece. This is what we skipped. This is the unit that we mm-hmm. need to provide some formative assessments and see if students really do have this this gap. But this is where I predict that the gap is going to occur, or better yet, do the formative and share the data. Mm-hmm. But that opportunity, I think the best thing that leaders can do and teachers can provide to one another is that gift of, this is what I missed. And I would say be intentional on that. Mm-hmm. Because if you rush through it, you know that kids are going to pick up whatever they pick up. Mm-hmm. So if you just say, hey, I'm not going to get to this, we're not going to focus on that, then that as a lump is much mm-hmm. easier for a future teacher to tackle, to say, I know all students didn't have direct instruction or a deliberate unit on whatever. When I was a middle school principal, it was always reconstruction. Like that mm-hmm. that was the big thing in the eighth grade. Is did the eighth grade social studies teacher make it to reconstruction mm-hmm. before those kids went off to the high school for US history, mm-hmm. and trying to cram that into the scope and sequence? But the US history teachers at the high school would know that, all right, we didn't make it to reconstruction, and so that's where we have to start, as opposed to trying to hurry up through it and then going, well, some kids got it, some kids didn't. Mm-hmm. And now we're left with this mess of, if we tackle that topic in the future, now some kids are like, we did this already. And then other kids are, you know, there's that we created the need to differentiate, and we created the disproportion in how students and what students were learning because we hurried through it.
And there's that transition also from middle school to high school with, you know, what did kids, and they're coming in from different schools, right? What did they learn at that school, or they moved from out of state, those type of things. But, you know, I don't think that transition is going to be so much different going into the 21-22 school year than it would have been otherwise, because as you're saying, the teachers, they know that they can't just, you know, just pick, you know, spray and pray. Right? and pick and choose what they want to teach, because they know they, you know, the SEL is much more important this year for one, and also, you know, stick to content they know that they can thoroughly teach and the kids will thoroughly understand. And, you know, there's some things that might fall by the wayside this year, but.
Right. And I don't mean like throw caution to the wind and don't close your door and just do SEL and not worry about the content. My suggestion is to take note and have information and be very mindful and intentional with what content is presented and what content is assessed versus what isn't. And then everyone will be in a better position in the fall to develop a plan of action.
In terms of the pick me up, what I meant was come at the end of the lesson when teachers are taking that time to reflect, or at the end of the day, or during their planning period, when they're taking a few minutes and decompartmentalizing and reflecting on their lessons. So what are some of those strategies that they can use?
I think we always have to be mindful of how our lessons are being received and how they're impacting the way that students are actively learning. So in the book, we talk about a few different things to keep in mind as we are reflecting on our lessons, and then also as we're planning the lessons in the following day. So one of the things that I encourage teachers to always think about as they're developing their lesson plan, we all often think of our lesson plans as, okay, what do we want students to learn? And then we think about it from our point of view. What am I going to do? Then what do I need to get out? Then what am I going to teach them? And then what am I going to have them do? And so during those times, just asking yourself, what are the students going to be doing while I'm doing fill in the blank? So while I'm sharing the introduction, or while I'm activating prior knowledge, what are students going to be doing in order to stay cognitively attentive to the lesson? And actively listening doesn't count. So by just saying they're going to be listening, we want to have some kind of evidence that students actually are listening and listening with purpose. So, you know, we know you all have been on a Zoom meeting, or somebody's been talking to you and your brain is like, I need to remember to stop at the post office on my way home. They close at 5 o'clock. And then all of a sudden someone's asking you a question. You're like, what, could you repeat that? Cause you just space out for a bit. And kids do the same thing. Maybe more than we do.
Oh, I think so.
And so if we assume that they're actively listening, but we don't have any evidence of such, then we're not doing ourselves a service, and we're kind of setting them up for a struggle. So creating activities where we assume that everybody has their hand raised and everybody is engaging in the learning. There are experts like Anita Archer that suggest every 10 minutes, that's the full capacity of a well-rested brain that can retain a time period of listening before they need to do some kind of brain dump.
Yeah.
So that brain dump can be just as simple as, how would you summarize what I have just shared with you, or, hey, just take a moment and jot down a few notes. And by that, I mean, you be quiet and let them actually take notes. Kids cannot do two cognitive tasks simultaneously. Listening and writing down notes are separate cognitive tasks, and they should never be expected to be done at the same time. So while you're speaking and you say, take notes on this lecture or take notes on this video, you need to pause and give students that mental moment so that they can process what they heard, put it in their own words, figure out how they're going to archive it in their notes, and then be ready to move on to the next chunk of learning. We often talk over kids and expect them to take notes at the same time. And then, you know, what they resort to is what their brain will permit them to do, which is copying. And so if we think about what that takes from a mental capacity, is if you're writing notes on the board and you want students to take notes, there is no, let me make sense out of this whole sentence. It is the most important, is that A-N-T or E-N-T, right? So kids are thinking about it almost at the phoneme level. They're not thinking about it on the thought or the content level when we resort to copy word for word off the board. We're not asking them to think in complete thoughts. And so you're much better off to give students some keywords and then allow them to make a complete thought out of what is there, but give them the quiet time to be able to do that in a way that allows them to commit the mental energy that it takes to process new learning. And that's a mistake that we often overlook.
I think that you're making some good points there, and it doesn't matter the age, but you know, because I would always assume high school students, well, they can, you know, they could do two things at once. I'm showing a video, you know, they could take notes, but you know, as you're saying, like I would often show videos that had French, it might've been in English, but it had French names, and, you know, overthink, not even thinking, okay, maybe they needed the spelling of XYZ place,
right?
Or, you know, taking notes off the board, like, you know, you're mentioning, they can't necessarily make out that letter. And I am not exactly the best handwriter on the board. So, you know, kids, I would expect kids to know what I wrote when some of my handwriting was sloppy. So, you know, it's like you're saying, one thing at a time. You know, give them that time to do that free write. I think that's a great activity once, you know, the instruction is over, you know, but kind of, you know,
or even within the instruction, just pause for a bit and say, all right, you know, I've given you a lot of information. So let me just pause here for a second and give you some time to make sense out of what I've been talking about and see where do you need some clarity? You know, I often think about, it's not even just about taking notes. It's really about that mental processing. I often think of a woman that I worked with when I was an elementary principal, and she was she was an autism consultant, and she was brilliant. She which taught me so much, and there were so many acronyms and new words to me that were just really common in her world as I was just learning about different kinds of behavior therapies and approaches that she was sharing with me. And as she would give me ideas and strategies, my mind was automatically going to, okay, how do I make that work? And how can I make that work for the kindergartner and for the fifth grade? I'm trying to make mental connections. And by the time I get to the, okay, yep, that makes sense to me, she's already like four or five sentences beyond where I was reflecting because I just needed to pause and process and make those connections in a way that was meaningful for my space. I'm running a gen ed school. She's an autism consultant. So how do I take those strategies and therapies that she works with one-on-one and apply them in a classroom with kids that are inclusive? So that's just another example of when you're learning something new, you just need that time to bucket it in your brain, like build those neurons, create those pathways so that you can access that information later. And that means we need to slow down.
And I think that's the example of when teachers all went remote and they all had to learn. I mean, there were some teachers that were familiar with a lot of the tech tools, but, you know, the principals gave the teachers the time to process. Okay, they were still having to teach, but like learning these tech tools, you know, taking the PD, you know, they made it obviously a lot better, the version 2.0, when a lot of schools open remotely in the fall. But, you know, we couldn't do everything at once, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's the same, like if you have some expert in the building, right? Or even just a professional development session, like you get so much overload of information, right? When you're going to a conference, and then, you know, take a little bit of time to digest that and then pick out of the bucket what you're going to use in the classroom.
Yeah. I mean, as adults, when someone's going too fast or when we don't understand, we have the communication skills to say, wait a minute, hold on, you're going too fast. Or we interject and say, okay, let me get this straight. Let me make sure I'm understanding you. And we offer a paraphrase to just make sure that we're on the right track. Students don't have that luxury to interrupt a teacher and say, wait a minute. And even if we did, you know, hey, can you imagine if 25 kids are raising their hands saying, now, wait a minute, let me just make sure I got this right. And so instead of waiting for them to take that initiative, let's build it into our lessons and say, this is a spot where I'm going to pause and allow you to say, okay, am I really understanding what's going on here? And am I ready for, you know, the second chunk of learning or whatnot? So how we pace the lesson, we need to make sure that we include time for students to process and that that time isn't at the end. Instead of taking a long, I mean, elementary, the students of younger students are generally better at this because they deal with kids that have way shorter attention spans. And so they take a lesson that maybe would be 20 minutes of teacher talk time and they break it into 3 to 5 minute chunks. So here's 3 to 5 minutes where I'm going to read a piece to you. Now you do this little task. Now I'm going to come back to the teacher. I'm going to do this little piece. Now you do this task. And so if we would do that same kind of structure instead of lumping a lecture at the beginning of a class for 20 or 30 minutes and then giving students 20 or 30 minutes of work time, you would be better off to do 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, and chunk the lesson in that way. And it also then gives teachers opportunities to catch misconceptions early, to intervene for tier one interventions when students aren't getting it before they're so far behind. Now you're 30 minutes behind instead of just 10 minutes behind. Where if you can say, oh, you didn't understand this thing at the very beginning, well, I can see why you didn't understand the remaining 20 minutes of the class, as opposed to, oh, you didn't understand this 5 minutes. Well, let me clarify that for you. And now you're ready. You are ready to receive the next layer of learning.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I see that happening with elementary school teachers a lot, right? And I think they're the experts on chunking and, you know, having taught high school a lot, but, you know, observed a lot of elementary school teachers. It's, you know, you're teaching in that time block in a secondary school of 50, 55 minutes. And, you know, you might transition from one activity to another, but I think, yeah, building in that reflection time is very important. I wanted to talk a little bit about where people can find you in some professional development sessions that you might have planned this summer and places that you're going to be speaking at.
Well, you mentioned ASCD. So ASCD is having a virtual conference this year. We're excited about that. So I will be presenting at ASCD in June virtually. And the name of the session that I'm presenting with my dear friend and respected colleague, Star Saxteen, is I think it's called Beyond Effective. So it's about how to take great teachers and help them to be awesome by just tweaking things a little bit, not reinventing the wheel, but hey, you're already doing this well. Let's take it up the next notch. So that's what that session is about. And then I also partner with the CORE Collaborative and they have a variety of professional learning opportunities. They typically have an annual conference, MindFueled, and then they're also doing a series, Build Back Wiser, which are online professional learning tools that focus on dignity and equity and looking at how we can bring instructional methods that are equitable for all students. Great. So those are a couple that I know of at this point.
Mm-hmm. And then people can also just find more information on your website as well. And, you know, there'll be probably a lot more coming as time goes on and, you know, maybe some in-person trainings that you're going to be doing next school year with buildings. So out of everything we spoke about today on the podcast, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
You know, I'd say give yourself some grace and also to be intentional with how you are causing students to partner with you in their own learning. So whether it's being reflective within the lesson, or if it's offering them that opportunity to bring some mental closure to the time allocated for learning, but we can't expect students to partner with us if we don't offer them the opportunity to.
Mm-hmm. That's so great to end with. So where can people find you online and connect with you on social media?
Twitter is great. I'm pretty active on Twitter. That's at Connie Hamilton. I also have a website, is conniehamilton.net. Don't do it at conniehamilton.com. That's a real estate agent somewhere out west. So conniehamilton.net. And I think you'll probably have my email in the show notes as well.
Great. Well, it was such a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks,
Dana. And, you know, I hope listeners get a lot out of just these tips and strategies that you've shared. And, you know, I wish you luck in the upcoming months with all the professional development that you'll be doing and helping schools out with.
Thank you. I look forward to it.